नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 15, Description of Mystic Yoga Perfections. Today we're doing six verses, text 21 through 26. Oh, the meanings of the first verse. Manaha, the mind, mayi, in me. Samyojya, completely absorbing. Deham, the material body. Tat, the mind. Anuvayuna, by the wind, excuse me, by the wind that follows. Madharana, of meditation in me. Anubhavena, by the potency. Tatra, there. Atma, the material body, goes. Yatra, wherever. By, certainly. Mana, the mind, goes. Mai mano mai susamyojya. Deham tadanuvayuna. Madharananubhavena. Tatratma yatra vaimana. Mano mai susamyojya. Deham tadanuvayuna. Madharananubhavena. Tatratma yatra vaimana. Mano mayi susamyojya. Deham tadanuvayuna. Madharananubhavena. Tatratma yatra vaimana. translation, the yogi who completely absorbs his mind in me and who then makes use of the wind that follows the mind to absorb the material body in me, obtains through the potency of meditation on me the mystic perfection by which his body immediately follows his mind wherever it goes. Report by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Tadanu Vayuna indicates the particular subtle air that follows the mind. When the yogi merges this air together with the body and mind in Krishna by the potency of meditation on the Lord, his gross material body, like the subtle air, can follow the mind anywhere. This perfection is called Mano Javaha. As far as I know, this information is not found anywhere else in our books. First time I'm hearing about it. It's one of the benefits of reading this section. We're hearing things we never heard before, which I always find interesting. So this description here, of course, all of these perfections have to do with meditation on Krishna. So if you want to be able to go anywhere, you absorb your mind in Krishna. Now the way this is described here, makes use of the wind that follows the mind. And in the purport it says, the yogi merges this air. There's a particular subtle air that follows the mind. So we know the different life airs in the body, prana, apana, vyana, samana, so on, all these different airs. So apparently there's this other air, wherever your mind goes, this air follows it. So you perform this kind of meditation. It says it makes use of the wind that follows the mind to absorb the material body in me. I was thinking it's kind of like, just like sometimes your mind, well, where our mind goes, our body tends to go. We often talk about how we have, you have whatever we do that starts on the subtle platform, then we enact it on the gross platform, with our physical bodies. So this idea is that you can do something, even really do it, anything you can think of, any place you want to go, then you think of that place and you ride on this wind and your whole body goes there somehow. So you better have control of your mind. I was thinking, if my body went everywhere my mind went, I'd be in big trouble. These things, too, you wonder. I've always had this idea in my mind, because we're getting very specific here, so maybe it's clarifying some things. Because Prabhupada would often talk about yogis. They're trying to attain perfection, spiritual perfection, transcendence, maybe actually perceive the super soul. But Prabhupada would often use the term, they get distracted by material cities. So I always had this idea, just in the course of their meditation, these things happen to them. And then they said, wow, this is cool, let me keep doing this. But what we're seeing here is it seems to be that there are yogis, they actually know about these things. So these must be described in some scriptures, how you do these things, or at least there's an oral tradition in the yoga circles. The yogis, they have to talk about something when they're out in the woods, so they talk, hey, did you hear about this trick so-and-so yogi just mastered? So it seems like they hear about, or somehow they know about these things, and then they actually try to master the skill by authoritative guidance that they're getting in these Vedic scriptures. Different, of course, we know that the Vedic scriptures cover everything. We're getting a nice indication of that here. Who knows about this? Is this common knowledge in yoga? I kind of doubt it. Most of them are hearing about these kinds of things. So in any case, this is how this one works. We'll go on to the next one here, verse 22. Yada mana upadaya yad yad rupam bubhushati tat tat bhavin mano rupam madhyoga balam ashraya. When the yogi, applying his mind in a certain way, desires to assume a particular form, that very form immediately appears. In other words, it appears, not he becomes, it becomes his body. Such perfection is possible by absorbing the mind in the shelter of my inconceivable mystic potency, Mat Yoga Balam, by which I assume innumerable forms. Now, actually, all the Sanskrit says is Mat Yoga Balam, my yoga power, my mystic power. But in the word for word, it says, by which I manifest innumerable forms. So here we see an indication of how the words are sometimes translated according to the context. So the implication here is that Krishna is talking about a specific mystic power that he has, because the context is about taking on new forms. So you meditate on Krishna's mystic power that is connected with that, getting different forms. So purport. This perfection is called Kama Rupa. Of course, Kama means desire, Rupa means form. So whatever form you desire, you can get that. Or the ability to assume any form that one desires, even the form of a demigod. So if you'd like to see what it's like to have eyes all over your body, like Indra, you can try that out. I was just listening last night to the pastime of Britu Maharaj, and Indra steals the horse. Then Indra finally comes to the end, after he's been defeated a couple of times, and he's in big trouble. He's about ready to be thrown into the fire by mantra. And then Lord Brahma appears and says, don't do it to Indra, because you're worshipping the demigods, and he's the sum total of all the demigods. It's pretty amazing. But then it says, the Prithu Maharaj embraced him, and I thought, how do you embrace him? He's got eyes all over the body. Don't stick your thumb in my eye. Watch where you're hugging me there. And it's hard to understand a lot of these. Imagine what it's like to have eyes all over your body. Huh? Boy, phew, that would be something. Let me go on here. The pure devotees absorb their minds in a particular type of service. So here we're shifting gears. This, to me, when I read this, I thought this is just the kind of thing that Prabhupada would do. He takes some verse that has some really technical kind of thing, but then always he segue into Krishna conscious perspective on it. So this is what we're doing here. The pure devotees absorb their minds in a particular type of service to Lord Krishna, and thus gradually assume a spiritual body for an eternal life of bliss and knowledge. Thus anyone who takes to the process of chanting the holy names of Krishna and follows the regulative principles of human life can acquire the ultimate perfection of Kama Rupa, assuming an eternal spiritual body in the kingdom of God. Now there's something, I think it's in a later verse, where it talks again about accepting somebody else's body. Because when I read this, I think, why would you want to go into somebody else's body? It seems really kind of perverse. Enter into someone's body. But it's explained, I think it's in an upcoming purport. Just like if somebody has some amazing skill or is extremely beautiful, you might think, I wonder what it's like to have to experience that. Just like when we were having the festival here, some of the devotees, the way they sing, I'm thinking, wow. For one thing, I think it's really enjoyable to be able to sing like that. It's kind of a sense gratification. I don't want to say it's a bad thing, but you know, just like we eat prasadam, it tastes good, it's sense gratification. So when you can really sing, it's very enjoyable to sing like that. So you might think, wow, I wish I could sing like that. Let me try out that person's body for a day and see what it's like. But it does seem kind of strange, doesn't it? Going into somebody else's body. Because when I was thinking about this at first, I thought, well, do you get their mind too? But apparently not. You just get inside their body with your own mind and your own ahankar, your own false ego. You still have this false sense of self of, you know, whoever you think you are in this material body. But then you're going into somebody else's body. Actually, on that point, I would say, where do we have some example of that? This is something, because originally I thought there's something to do with Shankaracharya, and I couldn't quite remember what it was, so I looked it up. So I think the context of this is Lord Chaitanya's South Indian tour, and I think he's visiting Sringeri Math, Shankaracharya's place in South India. So then there's some biography there of Shankaracharya. So there, Prabhupada, he tells this story here. After departing from Varanasi, Shankaracharya went to Prayag, where he met a great learned scholar called Kumarila Bhatta. Shankaracharya wanted to discuss the authority of the scriptures. But Kumarilabhatta, being on his deathbed, sent him to his disciple Mandana in the city of Mahishmati. This Kumarilabhatta, he's quoted often in our Tattva Sandarbha that Gopi Pranadana Prabhu did. So he's definitely one of the Mayavadi leaders still heard about in certain circles. So let's see. So he met Mandana, this disciple of Kumarilabhatta, at the city of Mahishmati. It was there that Shankaracharya defeated Mandana Mishra in a discussion of the Shastras. Mandana had a wife named Saraswati, or Ubhaya Bharati, who served as mediator between Shankaracharya and her husband. She mediated the debate. It is said that she wanted to discuss erotic principles and amorous love with Shankaracharya. So it's not clarified here. She's talking about mundane, or is she talking about rasa? It seems to me she's talking mundane here, because most people don't know about Madhurya Rasa, Rati. So this must be some... Anyway, she wanted to discuss ordinary love, apparently. And says, but Shankaracharya had been a brahmachari since birth and therefore had no experience in amorous love. So what did he do? He took a month's leave from Ubhaya Bharati in the middle of their debate. This is the lady. Ubhaya Bharati is the lady. He took a month's leave from Ubhaya Bharati. So he said, basically she said, I want to talk about amorous love. And he said, well, just, I'll get back to you on that. So he took off. And then it says, and by his mystic power entered the body of a king who had just died. So this is a little different because the person was dead. In this way, Shankaracharya experienced the erotic principles. So he brought the king back to life, and he enjoyed amorous pastimes, quote, in the body of the king, apparently. After attaining this experience, he wanted to discuss erotic principles with Ubhaya Bharati. So he came back and said, okay, now I know. But without hearing his discussion, she blessed him and assured the continuous existence of the Sringeri Mutt. She then took leave of material life. So, after all that, he said, wow, that was kind of a waste of time. I came back to tell her all about it, and then she says, that's all right, I don't really want to talk about it anyway. And then she left the material world. So, quite an interesting lady, this Ubhaya, what was her name again? Ubhaya Bharati? Yeah, Ubhaya Bharati. All right, let's go on to the next verse here. Did I read the whole thing, the last one? I think so. Or did I? Actually, let me make sure I did. Last sentence. Thus, anyone who takes to the process of chanting the holy names of Krishna and follows the regulative principles of human life can acquire the ultimate perfection of Kamarupa, assuming an eternal spiritual body in the kingdom of God. So you don't have to go inside someone else's body. You can get whatever body you want. Of course, devotees want spiritual body to serve Krishna. Incidentally, in the beginning of the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a discussion there initiated by Uttara. She's just heard the first part. And the basis of her question is, there's all kinds of transcendentalists, but you've just described the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis. She said, it's hard for me to believe that everybody gets the same, all these devotees. They're those that are so high as them, they must be experiencing something different from the other devotees. So there's a whole discussion there about different levels of devotees. And there's one, in one purport, Gopi Puranadana Prabhu summarizes in Vaikuntha five classes of devotees who are in Vaikuntha and how they get higher and higher levels of happiness, actually. They're all equal in one sense, they're all in Vaikuntha, but according to their level of devotion, they get different reward, where their happiness is deeper. And actually, jnana bhaktas can go to Vaikuntha. You can go to Vaikuntha, even though you still have a taste for jnana. Your devotion, because the next devotee, I think, is called Shuddha Bhakta. The next stage is a Shuddha Bhakta. And it goes up to Prema Bhakta, Prematura, I think it's called, the highest one. I forget what the different levels are. So I thought that was really interesting, that even with still some tinge of jnana, you can go to Vaikuntha. So still you get a spiritual body, you can still get sarupya mukti, you can look like Narayana if you want, and still have some jnana mixed in with your bhakti. Okay, let's go to check 23. Parakayam vishanshuddha atmanam tatra bhavayet pindam hitva vishet prano vayu bhuta shadangriva. Yes, shadangri. Anyone can take that apart? Six legs. It means a bee. Bees have six legs. So it's a shadangri vat, like a bee. So this is the example. When a perfect yogi desires to enter another's body, he should meditate upon himself within the other body. Oh, here we go. So we're getting elaboration here. And then, giving up his own gross body, he should enter the other's body through the pathways of air as easily as a bee leaves one flower and flies into another. So one can reach the stage where it's just a simple thing. You watch a bee in the flower garden, just from here to there, they're just buzzing around one body to another. So a yogi can do it just as easily. Pop into somebody's body and then pop out, I guess, and go into someone else's if they want. I guess they can read minds while they're in there, I suppose. Although it doesn't say that. Purport. As air is inhaled into the body through the nostrils and mouth, similarly, the life air of the yogi's subtle body travels through the pathways of external air. Let me read that again. The life air of the yogi's subtle body travels through the pathways of external air. So it sounds like ordinary air, or at least air outside the body, because there are subtle airs outside the body too. So it may not mean just what we think of air blowing around. And easily enters into the body of another person, just as the bee easily flies from flower to flower. One may admire a heroic man or beautiful woman and desire to experience life within their extraordinary material body. Such opportunities are available through the mystic perfection called Parakaya Pravesanam. Pada means another, another's. Kaya, body, Pravesanam, enter into. Pure devotees, being absorbed in meditation upon the spiritual form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are not actually attracted to any material body. Thus, the devotees remain transcendental and satisfied on the platform of eternal life. So if we don't have an attraction for entering into somebody else's body, that's a good thing. Text 24. Parsnya pidya gudam pranam vidura kanta murdhasu aropya brahmarandrena brahmanityotsujetanum. So here we're hearing about the brahmarandra. Translation, the yogi who has achieved the mystic perfection called swachanda mrityu blocks the anus with the heel of the foot and then lifts the soul from the heart to the chest, to the neck, and finally to the head. Situated within the brahmarandra, the yogi then gives up his material body and guides the spirit soul to the selected destination. Purport. This mystic opulence of swachanda mrityu, or dying at will, was wonderfully exhibited by Bhishmadeva at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the term Brahma, as used in this verse, is an example of upalakshana. Lakshana means symptoms, generally. Characteristics like that. An example of upalakshana, or the use of a general term to indicate various concepts. Brahma here indicates the particular destination selected by the yogi, namely the spiritual sky, the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, or any other destination that has attracted the yogi's mind. So the point of this is that, well, it's just a Sanskrit discussion, but because in the verse it says, and then he goes to Brahma. So you would think, well, that means he goes to the Brahma Jyoti, or Brahman. But Sridhar Swami says, well, technically it can mean any destination. It's using as Brahma as kind of as an example. So sometimes the yogis, they can go to other planets, not just into somebody else's body. They can leave the material world if that is their desire. Or if they want to go to some other planet, they can also do that. by this meditation by which one raises the soul on the life airs. It says here, from the heart to the chest to the neck or throat, and then to the Brahmarundra, the top of the skull, then leaves through that. Translation, text 25. Viharishyan surakride matstam satvan vibhavayet vimane no patishtanti satvavritti surastriya. So surastriya, the demigod women. The yogi who desires to enjoy in the pleasure gardens of the demigods should meditate on the purified mode of goodness, which is situated within me. Now this just says sattvam. I don't think this means shuddha sattva. I think it means ordinary material goodness, but in some sense purified. Let's see. Should meditate on the purified mode of goodness which is situated within me, and then the heavenly women generated from the mode of goodness will approach him in airplanes. I've always wondered about the upsuras, actually. Sometimes it seems like they're sort of part of the scenery. Do you know what I mean? It's like in the spiritual, the whole kingdom is created there. It's kind of like Disneyland sort of thing. And you go there and you spend some time, you spend all your money there, then you have to come back when you run out of money. So it's just sort of like an enjoyable place. Because someone wrote to us at BTG one time and said, you know, I kind of think the upsuras are being taken advantage of. Something. What's cool? What's up with these upsuras anyway? They're being exploited. Yeah. So I was thinking, well, does somebody take birth as an upsura? It could be that they're just sort of, like here it says, they're generated from the mode of goodness. There's a pastime we'll hear about later in this Uddhava Gita about Pururava, King Pururava. Now he comes up earlier in the Bhagavatam, and there's a whole story about he marries a demigoddess. What was her name? Urvashi. And he's so crazy about her, he just can't, she leaves him, because, anyways, the whole story, he was never supposed to appear before her naked, and he did one time, this whole story, but that she leaves, and he's just going crazy, just has to see her, he'll do anything for her. So at some point, he's given what is supposed to be Urvashi by these Gandharvas, but he discovers after some time, well, she doesn't seem like the Urvashi that I know. And you find out that she's an Agni Stulli girl. Now, I didn't read all the purports. I'm not sure if Prabhupada explains what this means exactly. But somehow she's like a robot. AI, we talk about AI, artificial intelligence. Well, she's some kind of creation. She's not a real person. So maybe these heavenly society girls, maybe they're just part of the, part of the set. Part of the set that one enjoys on, you go there in the heavenly planets. Anyway, I thought this because it says here, generated from the mode of goodness. And they come in airplanes and pick you up. And so to me, all of these, the whole theme that runs throughout here is that these yogis who can control their senses and engage in this intense meditation, but they have these material desires. It seems so incompatible. We're trying to fight material desires and we can't. It's so hard to concentrate. But they, it seems like no big deal. Actually, this whole idea of meditation in the Vedic, in our books, the whole Vedic civilization, it's quite interesting because sometimes we hear about, for example, was it Vishwamitra who meditated for 60,000 years? So you get the idea that he just sat down one day and started meditating and didn't stop for 60,000 years. But that doesn't seem to be the picture that we get in different places. For example, Shamika Rishi, when Pariksit Maharaj arrived in his ashram, first of all, he apparently had a family. At least he had a son, so he must have had a wife there somewhere. So he wasn't just meditating all the time. And he was also in deep meditation. It says that he was in that state of Turiya, the fourth state. He was in transcendence in his meditation. He was going really deep. But apparently he wasn't doing it all day long. And we also hear that part of going to some holy place to meditate, just like Dhruva Maharaj, he was also going to meditate. And we know he was doing his intense meditation. But Narada Muni also told him, worship a deity and take a bath in Yamuna three times a day. So he wasn't just sitting down and meditating the whole time. So somehow it seems like maybe it's the sadhana, you build up to it. You know, first you meditate for a few minutes, and then a few hours, and then a few days, and a few months, and then you stay there forever, or at least for a really long time. Anyway, let me press on here, otherwise it's getting late. Text 25, did I read the purport? Yes, about Bhishma, Brahmarundra, okay. Viharishyan surakride matstam sattam vibhavai. Oh, I'm sorry, I already did that verse. All right, let's go on. We're on the last one now. This one actually has the longest purport, although it's not very long. I'll just read through it. Yata sankalpayet buddhya yadava matpara puman mai satye manoyunjam tatatat samupashmute. A yogi who has faith in me, absorbing his mind in me, and knowing that my purpose is always fulfilled, will always achieve his purpose by the very means he has determined to follow. So this is the qualification of these yogis. They have faith in Krishna, they absorb the mind in Krishna, and knowing that my purpose is always fulfilled. In other words, if they ask Krishna for something, it's going to happen. They're always successful. Purport. In this verse, the word yada, whenever, indicates that by the mystic power called yata sankalpa sansiti, one will achieve one's objective even if one pursues it at an inauspicious time. Lord Krishna is called satya sankalpa, or he whose desire, intention, purpose, or resolve always comes to pass. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions that one should determine to revive one's lost relationship with the Supreme Lord through the infallible means of devotional service, which can be executed at any time or in any place. Now this next sentence is really, I thought was quite interesting. The books, the books that he mentions, if you know what they are, I'll explain a little. There are many books giving proper guidance for achieving Lord Krishna, and the following are mentioned. So these are the books that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is mentioning here to achieve Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami's Sankalpa Kalpa Vriksha, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's Sri Govinda Lilamrita, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti's Sri Krishna Bhavanamrita and Sankalpa Kalpa Druma, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sri Gauranga Smarana Mangala. Now all of the books on this list are very high literature. Several of them have to do with the Ashtakalya Lila Smarana, where you think about what Krishna is doing during the eight different periods of the day. In fact, I'm pretty sure that that's what this one is. In fact, I might have read this. Sri Gauranga Smarana Mangala. The same thing is, the same meditation is given for meditating on Gauranga's eight periods of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's day. So these, I started reading, I think it was last year, Govinda Lilamrita. And I pretty much stopped after a page or two because it's really kind of intense, graphic, romantic affairs going on between Radha and Krishna. Starts at the beginning of the day, they wake up in bed together, and I think, whoa, I think I better read about the Cowherd Boys instead of reading about this. It's really, so all these books that are mentioned here, they're really, we talk about postgraduate, Prabhupada talks about Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, postgraduate, well, this is definitely postdoctorate, these books, very high books that he's mentioning. Anyway, continuing, almost done the purport. In the modern age, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, has given us over 60 large volumes of transcendental literature, which can fix us firmly on the path back home, back to Godhead. Our sankalpa, or determination, should be practical and not useless. We should resolve to make a permanent solution to the problems of life by going back home, back to Godhead. So that's probably what my class should have been about, but I thought I'd talk about what the verses were discussing directly. So I'll stop here. Anybody have any questions or comments or discussion? Yes, over here. Guru Prasad, quick on the draw today. The question is, do you have to get permission for somebody else to enter your body? As far as I understand, no, that's not the way it works. Of course, we know that ghosts That's why, in fact, ghosts kind of have this power too, but the kind of bodies they end up in are generally people who were intoxicated or they have a weak mind. So there may be some way to resist if your mind is strong enough, I suppose. But it doesn't seem to indicate that in the purport that we read here, because we're talking about people who have some great qualification. Of course, beautiful body is maybe not great qualification, but usually beautiful body also goes along with good karma, of having a pretty good brain too. But it also said some heroic person. So the yogi can enter into even, it seems like, qualified person. So apparently, it may also depend on the strength of the yogi and the strength of the yogi's intention, whether they're successful or not in their attempt. But as we read in the verse, it says they do it just as easily as a bee goes from one flower to the other. But at least the indication we got in this verse today was, doesn't matter what the other person is. Of course, then it raises the question of, does a person know that someone's in there? Or are we just sort of sitting there in the corner somewhere, you know, just next to the liver and observing what's going on, and the person inside the body doesn't really know you're there? Who knows? I don't think we need to find out necessarily. Where's the microphone?
You were relaying the story of, I forget, was it Madhvacharya or Ramanujacharya?
Shankaracharya.
Oh, Shankaracharya. Why would he feel obliged to...
yeah, there's not enough background given to the story. That's naturally the question. If she wants to talk about ordinary romantic affairs, and he's, of course, his great sannyasi renunciant, defeating all other philosophers, why would he care if she wants it? He would just say no. So maybe he felt obliged because of her position. I mean, that's one possible answer. She was mediating this debate that was going on. Oh. She was a respectable lady, and he felt some, you know, to reciprocate with her. She wants, but I don't know anything about it, so let me find out about it. Then we can have a conversation. Oh, he's, Ram Govinda is saying that Shankaracharya wanted her husband to join him, to become a sannyasi like him. So the wife didn't like that. So that was part of her motivation, I guess. I'm not sure how that would change that. Like, well, you don't know what you're missing or something, and leave my husband here. Don't take him away because we're experiencing this high rasa of conjugal, mundane conjugal rasa. Yes. Kali Pani Prabhu.
I've been thinking a lot recently about the idea of placing the consciousness in the goal. Mm. In many ways, Krishna consciousness, that's what it's all about. Krishna says, man mana bhava mad bhakta. Think of me, and you will come to me. And yam yam vapi smaram bhavam. Whatever you think of at the time of death, that state you're going to attain. And that's what the yogis are doing, it seems like. And even in ordinary life, whatever intent, I've been experiencing this recently, that whatever intention you have, I have, it just kind of comes about. Mm. Rather than trying to manipulate and plan and scheme and force things to happen, I just assume an intention. I retain an intention within me, and then it magically seems to happen. Mm. It's quite amazing, actually. I've been quite amazed by this, and it seems like these yogis, they just kind of they have a kind of enhanced version of that ability, whereby like a bee going from flower to flower, it's so easy for them. Whatever intention they have immediately just takes place.
You want it badly enough, it happens. Although there's another aspect to it here, of course. Every one of these is connected to Krishna, and it mentions specifically meditation on Krishna. So they're meditating on Krishna, apparently with this desire as the foundation of their meditation. They want something, but at the same time, they're fixing their minds on Krishna to get what they want. But it is true, of course, because Krishna fulfills our desires. So as, now, of course, here we had this idea of satya sankalpa, the idea of sankalpa. It's part of sadhana practice, actually, to make an actual statement of intent. I know they do this at japa retreats. Today I'm going to chant 64 rounds. You express your intention, and then you follow through and do it. So this is part of, this is one aspect of sadhana is considered to be a good thing to do. That you're very definite about it. Not that, oh yeah, I do some hearing and chanting. But no, there's this specific thing, just like fasting also. Today I'm going to fast. So these are expressions of one's intention. And it seems like it fortifies it. And it also it makes it more of a commitment. I said it out loud, now I really have to do it. That's part of it.
I just had an amazing example of how this happens recently. I was trying to play an instrumental piece on my guitar. It's quite difficult, and I've never really been able to get it down properly. And I'm always thinking, oh, I've got to put this finger there, and I've got to pluck at the same time, and it never ever comes out right. So I was playing it the other day, and I thought, well, instead of thinking how to do it, let me just put my consciousness in the result that I envisaged, the musical result that I envisaged. So I was playing it and just hearing the music. I was just listening to the music and appreciating its beauty. And it came out completely perfect. Like I've never, ever played it before.
Yeah. Pranga Vinda Prabhu, and then we'll go back to Raghavendra.
Chaitanya, that Prabhupada applies few purports in Bhagavatam. That Kamalagi Krishna Vaje Pai Krishna Vase Kamachari Dasoite Hai Abhilasa Krishna Kohe Ami Bigyo Murke Vishay Kena Divo Sacharnam Mita Diya Vishay Bulaivo. Even though the living entity approach Krishna with a fulfilling desire, but Krishna is asking himself, I am intelligent, he is fool, he can get the transcendental happiness when he is approaching, instead he is asking the poison. But I am being intelligent, why should I give him the poison? Rather I will give him the devotional service and that he will forget. So I am asking, is that applicable to the devotees approaching or the yogis or anybody?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's the verse in the... Residents of Jambudweep offer prayers. Satyam dishati artitam artito yata. So the same idea is there. Krishna says, even if someone has some material desire, then I don't fulfill the desire or desire it in such a way. Well, actually, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Prabhupada, or the verse paraphrases it, saying, Krishna says, why should I give this foolish person this material thing? Instead, I'll give him my lotus feet. So he'll forget the thing that he wants. So question is, well, how does this apply to these yogis? Because they're meditating on Krishna, but they have some material desire. Well, ultimately, that meditation must be purifying. Maybe it takes longer. And also, the intention, you know, we can think of Krishna in different ways, just like Paramatma, especially if you're thinking of Paramatma or Krishna Bhagavan as an order supplier in that way, without any... not really kind of devotion, more like a business transaction. If I do this to God, then I'll get this. But at least in our situation, even if we have some material desire, we know there's some devotion that's being nurtured here right away to Krishna, because we know more about Krishna and the attraction is there. But it could have something to do with that level of attraction and realization, and with the relationship with God, and even in the beginning of our spiritual life, our relationship with Krishna, even though we're completely materialistic in the beginning, still it's different. It's different from the yogis. Sometimes the idea of the super soul, it seems almost impersonal. Of course, Shantarasa on that platform, the yogis, they're experiencing God, but almost not as a port. There's a form there, But there's not really an experience of a personality. So that's the advantage that devotees get right in the beginning, that they had that extra attraction there. So Krishna responds to that initial taste for him, you might say, or initial devotion.
Savritta Sobhanikai, that verse that Prahlad Maharaj quoted, that I'm not a businessman, that I'm serving you and then you give me something, I keep on serving, you give me something. But then in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Prahlad Maharaj is rephrasing that. He said, actually you're still asking me as if like I have to ask. So I think you are asking me because you want to world, you want the world to know that my pure devotee actually, even I ask him many times, but they never have any desire.
Mm-hmm.
So which way to look at it? In one angle, actually Krishna wants to give.
Yes, Krishna wants to give. But ultimately he surrendered to his devotees, the desire of his devotees. And he can do many things simultaneously, even if they seem contradictory sometimes. For Krishna, that's no problem. Actually, one of the aspects of Maya that comes out in the Bhagavad Sandarbha is that Maya can do contradictory, impossible things. What to our ordinary rational minds is impossible, which, you know, Aristotle might say, this doesn't work. Maya can make it work somehow. So what to speak of Krishna? He can do things that seem contradictory, but they're all satisfactory ultimately. Let's do Raghavendra Prabhu first. He's been waiting.
This principle of fixing one's mind on a sankalpa was brought up this weekend by Vaisheshika Prabhu when he was speaking about selling sets of Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. He quoted a motivational speaker as saying, frame it or be framed. In other words, you know, establish the goal, the intention, you know, and keep that in your mind, or frame it, actually frame it so you're seeing it every day, and or otherwise other things will consume your attention and focus.
Good.
It's interesting. Also, I remember way in the past where someone said that if you choose one of Prabhupada's desires to make that your desire, that will come true. If you truly keep that fully absorbed in that desire, because it's the desire of a pure devotee.
Dharmaraj Prabhu. Actually, there's an early letter of Prabhupada, I think it's to Brahmananda. And he says, you should never be without ISKCON thought. So what is ISKCON, of course? It means spreading Krishna consciousness. So we also have intentions in that way. We have something we want to do to help spread Prabhupada's movement and focus on that. That's a very helpful in advancing steadily in Krishna consciousness. Dedicate your life to some particular aspect of Prabhupada's mission.
Going back to your point on Prangabindra Prabhu's point and your comments on it, you know, with the yogis and the devotees, it appears to be, as I was thinking about this for a while also, that the yogi's intention is fixed on this goal. Well, okay, this is my meditation, I want this desire. A devotee, or let's say with us coming to Krishna consciousness, we are being educated, well, this is the goal, to get Krishna. But in our immaturity, there's so many different material desires are there and all mixed up in a whole, you know, pot of khichdi. So, but the initial idea, the main focus is, or at least the underlying point. So I was just thinking out loud that Krishna seems to recognize that and then clear all these different things out and try to give us, you know, what we are supposed to be looking for. Where else somebody else or the materialist, whatever desires they have, Krishna just fulfills, including the yogis. So. just thinking.
Yeah, because we've been educated right from the beginning, so we avoid a lot of traps that other people fall into. We know better right from the beginning. We may still be susceptible to certain things, but at least we have the knowledge, so that's certainly helpful. So Prabhupada has trained us right away to avoid so many problems. There's nobody in ISKCON that I know of who's trying to master the art of entering other people's bodies. So we know, it's like, we think that's so strange. Why would anybody want to do that? So we know it's strange because Prabhupada has taught us so well. Yes, over here, Mataji.
Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is written for the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be like a swan to extract what it's for us. So there are so many other jivas. So they may read and they may have that desire. So Prabhupada has given ocean of knowledge for us. So like our aim is to go back to Prabhupada. We came here, we go back to Prabhupada.
Yes.
Meditate on his lotus feet.
Very good. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.